This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Cracking Monday for the 1st of April, coming in after the weekend full of mini eggs to find a lot of news on the desk. That includes higher petrol prices, up around 3.5% for the month of April. Daniel Richards, an economist at Emirates NBD, has been putting that in context for us and telling us what it means for inflation. We've also got a new directive from the DLD to get more Emirati brokers involved in the property market. Jean Jahinki, the COO of Property Monitor and the Director of Market Intelligence and Research at Cavendish Maxwell, has been doing the numbers on that one for us. There's also rumours of a new 10-year golden business licence. What could that mean for commercial property in the way that leases are structured? And indeed, demand for commercial sales. Andrew Elliott is the Director of Commercial at Chesterton's. He's been giving us his opinion. And there's a new hotel in town. Tom Urquhart, always diligent in his prep for the show, went down and checked it out. It is the new Five Lux on JBR. We've been speaking to its general manager.
Dan Richards is here, media economist at Emirates NBD. Morning, Daniel.
Hi, good morning.
Let's talk petrol prices, up 3.5% or so yesterday for the month of April, now up by just over 10% for the year. What's your reaction?
Yeah, so, I mean, it was to be expected. If you look at what's happened in Brent crude prices, petrol prices at the pump now track far more closely what we see in global oil markets. So over a quarter, over a year to date, Brent futures are up 11%, and that is now starting to be reflected in the prices we're going to be paying this April. So that will put more pressure on people's pockets, but it's not really any surprise.
Inflation for the UAE, it's one of the things that you put into your inflation calculations that all economists do. How significant?
Yeah, so transport as a component of the basket, that's for, you know, the example that the setters try to make to reflect what people buy most with their money. So transport makes up 9.3%, nearly 10% of the basket. That's a pretty significant component. So this uptick in petrol prices, it puts petrol prices up around 5% year on year compared to we were a year ago. Now, the last inflation print we had for Dubai, it was for February, 3.4%, I believe it was on the headline. When you look at the transport component of that, that was negative because petrol prices in February were actually lower than they were the February previous. Now, in April, petrol prices will be higher, so that's potentially going to exert upwards pressure on that headline CPI reading.
I'm not overly concerned about inflation-busting petrol prices. Should I be?
No, like, you know, 10% is not the most significant part. That would be housing. There we've seen inflation in the housing sector has been more like 6.2%, and that's been the real driver. In terms of what we see over the rest of the year, our average is for 3% CPI inflation this year. That would be a slowdown from a 3.4% average last year. And that's really on the back of an expectation of an easing in those price pressures in the second half. Petrol prices might see some upwards pressure, but we'd expect some of that growth in housing to come off, as you would expect other components of a basket to be a bit gentler as well.
Okay, let's get the crystal ball out in the Business Breakfast studio. We know the petrol price for the next 30 days, it's been set, but what about the rest of the year? As you say, that's going to be linked to oil prices on international markets, and we have an OPEC meeting this week.
Yeah, so the OPEC meeting coming up this week, we don't really expect any significant change or anything really to come out of that. We'd expect it to be a pretty quick meeting as they go, to be honest, where they meet, they say, let's stick to a plan, and they stick to a plan. We'd expect more of a reassessment perhaps to come in June, but this time around, we think we're going to stick, especially given we've already seen the announcement that those voluntary extra production curbs are going to be maintained through the end of Q2, through this quarter now, already. So no real expectation of change there. Maybe after Q2 we see some easing of those production curves, provided that demand and prices remain where they want them to be.
The International Energy Agency in its recent report warning of a shortage of oil by the end of this year, citing a couple of things. One is those OPEC plus production cuts that you mentioned, but also strong demand, particularly in emerging markets. We got that Chinese manufacturing data out this morning, strongest in over a year. Indian economy continues to power ahead with around about 6 or 7% growth. And of course, the two biggest populations in the world. Where do you see oil at the end of this year? $87 or thereabouts for a barrel of crude today.
So our forecast is for an average of $82.50 a barrel. I think arguably there's probably some upside risk to that forecast as it stands, especially given what we've seen in terms of that spike over recent weeks. And as you say, the expectation that demand will start to pick up in the second half. Equally though, probably there's some more production coming online. If oil production curbs in OPEC Plus are eased, then you have some of the sideline producers like Guyana coming on more forcefully as well. And then arguably some of the price action we've seen over this year, over the last 6 months, has been supported by risk premia. The hope would be that some of those start to ease off as well, as maybe some of those tensions start to ease, and that might see some downwards pressure on prices as well.
Let's talk about gold now, because it's been quite the run over the past few days. Brandy Scott is our DJ this morning. Brandy is on the wheels of steel. Can we have some gold music to get us in the mood? Yeah, thin trading in Asia this morning. It's still the Easter weekend. Many markets are closed today, but that is not holding back the gold bugs. I'm looking at live trading right now. Where are we? Up 2% this morning, almost but not quite, $2,300 an ounce. What's the story, Daniel?
Yeah, I mean, I double-checked this when I left this morning, which wasn't so long ago, and it was 1.3 then. So we've really seen up 1.3% at that point. So it's really seen extraordinary spike in recent weeks. I think there's a number of factors. Hard to put the pin on it exactly, but you can say that there has been a bit of an everything rally in recent weeks. We've seen some other asset classes like Bitcoin spike in a similar manner. Then you have the some other elements. You have very strong growth in India, which you mentioned, which expects to continue. And of course, that is a traditionally strong demand market for physical gold. And then also, arguably, you have some central banks which are increasing their reserves of gold as they perhaps look to diversify their reserves away from an over-reliance on the dollar.
Do you have an outlook for gold? Is it something that you guys get involved in at Emirates NBD, or do you leave that to the guys in the gold suit?
I think the guys at the gold suit probably might have a better idea. It is something, of course, that we look at as a key important commodity, but I think it's fair to say that it has exceeded our expectations so far this year. And I think it's probably exceeded most people's expectations, especially what spike we've seen in recent weeks.
Just while you're here, a quick word on Oman, if you wouldn't mind. Report out over the weekend from the ratings analysts at S&P. Now, they've kept their rating on Oman steady at BB+, which isn't great. It's just below investment grade, but they have changed their outlook. It was stable. It's now positive. They point to various things, including, yeah, high oil price, good for Oman, obviously, but also they talk about economic reforms in Oman. Not two phrases you often hear in the same sentence. What do you make of this?
Yeah, Oman has made some great strides in over the past couple of years, arguably. We saw that public debt level get up to 70% plus of GDP a few years ago. Now it's down around half of that, between 35 and 40% of GDP. And I think that has been recognized by the rating agencies, as well as the ongoing efforts. It's not only the oil windfall and the gas windfall they enjoyed a couple of years ago. It's also a diversification of the tax base. We had VAT was introduced in 2021, okay, somewhat later than was introduced here, but it is a step in the right direction as Oman makes those essential reforms if it's going to diversify its economy away from the ups and downs of the oil market.
Sultan Haitham, I'm just checking now. He's been the Sultan of Oman for more than 4 years now. It was pre-COVID that he took over, 11th of January 2020. 20 seconds left. Do we have Haithamnomics yet in Oman?
Well, I think that's astonishing. I guess that shows us how the pandemic plays with people's perceptions of time, because I didn't think it was that long either. But like I say, 2021, that's when the VAT came in. We are starting to see those steps. So I think you can make a case that, yes, it has made a difference in terms of the direction of travel there in Oman.
Daniel, great speaking to you this morning. Thanks for braving the fog to drive into the Dubai Eye studio. Daniel Richards, Senior Economist at Emirates NBD. Thank you.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Yeah, as Brandy mentioned, we're going to get more on that top story now. Dubai working with developers, including MR Properties, Expo City Dubai, and others, to ensure that 15% of new projects are sold through Emirati brokers. Joining us in the studio now is somebody from a brokerage house, Cavendish Maxwell. Zanja Hinki is the Director of Market Intelligence, also the Chief Operating Officer of Property Monitor Zahn, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Morning.
We were hoping to get alongside you an Emirati property broker to discuss this. And I know producer Mohammed was reaching out to a few people, but we couldn't. And maybe that tells part of the story. There aren't many Emirati property brokers out there, which is why this new directive. What do you make of it?
Yeah, no, there are not many out there, and I'll do my best to fill in as one for 10 minutes. There really aren't. If you look at DoD license registrations, about 650 in total out of 7,500 brokers. So 3.5%, give or take. Emirati population of Dubai, about 12%. So there's a big delta in between those. And even if you look at that 650 that are in the business, most aren't in it in the regular sense, in the thick of it, like your normal real estate broker. They might have a license to do other activities. They're not practicing day to day. So there's a bit of a shortage there. And then from the brokers that we talked to, or the brokerages we've talked to, they're struggling on Emiratization. They can't find people that actually find it as a career that they want to get into. Some have had great success, others not so much. So this could be a really nice first step into going down that line.
So that's interesting. So the premise of this, as I understood it, is that there is a bit of an issue, that there aren't enough real estate brokers. And we can say that premise holds, that theory holds. There is an issue. There aren't enough Emirati real estate brokers,
yes,
given the size of the city. Okay, which brings us on to what can be done about it. So from a regulatory perspective, things like this will help. Brandy and I were having a conversation earlier on, though. These are for quite prestigious, well-established developers and off-plan developers. This isn't someone hustling to rent out a two-bed in Udmeta, as I understand it. What's your understanding?
So, yeah, look, it's the news has just come out. Haven't read the full thing. That's not available yet. You go to DoD's website. You can only access information if you're Emirati. But looking at it, we also don't know. Developers could be hiring these for their internal sales team for that 10 to 15% allocation. There's going to be some nuances with it. If you're a developer and you're earmarking 10 to 15% of your inventory for sale by a very small workforce, and the rest of that sells out to non-Emirati brokers being head of sales, what do you now do with the inventory that's there? You want to sell it, right? So it could be for those Emiratis that are in the business, a lot of business could come very quickly because they're the only ones that can handle it, whether it's co-broking deals with other brokers and doing it together, or then people just seeing the opportunity and driving into an industry that historically just hasn't seen many people getting on either side, on the resale side or on the off-plan side. So starting with off-plan, I think, gives them that entrance into the market. I wouldn't be surprised if you see this as almost a prep school for real estate. You get in, you start with off plan, and then maybe you go into asset management, property management, development. You could see the next Bingardi come out of this.
In terms of the attractiveness of the job, clearly when it works well, it works incredibly well. People making millions, picky currency as real estate brokers, and lots of them doing it. It's not just one or two are. Many people are doing very, very well out of it. And yet when you start, it's often zero base salary, commission only, or a very low base salary. And that isn't attractive to everyone, is it?
It's not. And I think I'm not fully up to speed on requirements for amortization, but I believe there are minimum salary requirements and other things. So some brokerages may have to pivot a little bit with their models if they want to take advantage of this. But it is one of those where I cut my teeth as a broker. Right. Years ago in New York, that's how I started in the industry, with a goal as it was a stepping stone to do that, to go into leadership and management and then on to further things. So I think it's a good move to get people into the industry as a whole. Whether they stay brokers for long, I'm not sure.
There's also the potential stigma of the real estate broker. We speak regularly to Nigel Silito at Insight Discovery, and they do a index of the most trusted industries in Dubai, the UAE, the wider region. But we're always more interested in the least trusted. And that list, I mean, it varies, but real estate brokers, life insurance salespeople kind of vie for top position on an annual basis.
Yeah, look, it's similar in the US. It's life insurance, real estate, and funnily enough, attorneys are the three less like journalists come in there as well. Right? A lot of that's a good company to be around, but look, brokers get a bad rap because of some bad apples that are in the industry. We have 17,000 right now. If I were looking to grow a country and attract 100 really good brokers, I think I'd struggle to find the 100 I want out of that 17,000. It's a reasonable low barrier to entry, right? There is a course, there's legislation, there's things that you go through with very, very high earning potential. So you get all sorts of people that come into it. Dubai also has something built in that doesn't really help with the quality sometimes. If you're getting into the brokerage business in a mature part of the country, and I'll go back to the US again, that was mine. People get into it for a career. They're going, it might not be the first career, but it is likely going to be their last. They're like, I'm going to do this for the next 10, 15, 20 years and build a business out of it. Here, due to the transient nature of what Dubai is, people come in going, I'm here for, it's changing, right? But before, I'm here for a year, 2 years, 3 years. They're not thinking that long term. To be successful in brokerage, it's a relationship business, and you have to treat it like a business. You build those relationships, you grow referrals, you take that to the next level. Maybe what we're going to see is Emiratis who are here long term do take it as a career and actually do lift the standard of what every broker here should be doing to run a successful business.
I've mentioned the word hustle a couple of times, and there is hustling to close the deal, but there's also a lot of hustling to get the mandates for you to be the one who's selling the apartment in the marina or the villa on Palm Jumeirah or whatever it may be. And we've been speaking to brokers, haven't we, Brandy, for years about this exclusivity. Some markets allow for exclusivity. Only one broker or maybe two brokers can list a property. Traditionally, we haven't had exclusivity. If I'm selling an apartment, I could, in theory, go to Cavendish Maxwell, I could go to FAM, I could go to Better Homes, and so on. And there's nothing stopping me having it listed with several people. Only market forces will stop it. You know, you get to the third broker and it's listed with three, and the fourth broker, and they're going, you know what, I'm not going to bother.
Yeah.
But where do we stand with that at the moment? What would be the ideal, the best practice that we might aspire to? And what's the reality at the moment?
So exclusivity is low but growing, but some people misunderstand what it actually is. Some people think you're listing with that broker and only working with that broker. If you're giving exclusivity to someone, it's exclusivity to represent you as the seller to market that project or that property and drive buyers there, whether they are direct buyers or buyers represented by other brokers that you will cooperate with. If you're a broker taking exclusivity and not working with everyone in the market, you are not doing your fiduciary duty to that seller and shouldn't have it in the first place. That's why you see them sometimes listed multiple. Others under the guise of they think, oh, I get it out there, it's more exposure. Not really the case. You don't want to see it three times on the portal. You want to see it once. You want to see a broker put their hard effort and be willing to put money behind it if they've got it exclusively to drive people to it either directly or with the cooperation of another broker and share the commission. Because at the end of the day, their job is to get the seller the most money with the best terms, not their own pocket.
Always good speaking to you, Zahn. Thanks very much indeed for joining us this morning. The thoughts of Zahn Jahinki there, Chief Operating Officer of Property Monitor, and he is working with a brokerage house, Director of Market Intelligence and Research at Cavendish Maxwell on The Business Breakfast.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Property expert number two this morning is in to discuss something quite different. There has been discussions at a very high level. The UAE is considering a 10-year golden business license and potentially a 5-year silver license. What could that mean for commercial real estate? Andrew Elliott is director of the commercial agency at Chesterton's. Andrew, it's lovely to see you. Good morning.
Good morning, Brandy.
So what could it mean for commercial real estate? Let's start with rentals.
I think for us in commercial real estate, it's maybe something that's going to help mature the market a little bit longer. We currently do a lot of tenancy contracts where companies are only committing to 1 and 2 years. I think if you read the article, you'll see that it clearly states that people looking at a 5 and 10 year trade license will be looking at a minimum length of tenancy contract. And I think that minimum tenancy contract is something that's going to help mature the commercial market a little bit more, get landlords to commit to tenants a little bit longer, get tenants to commit to properties a little bit longer, be in a position that maybe companies are investing more in their office space as opposed to sitting there and using it as a temporary solution, as a 1-year contract or a 2-year contract.
Who's not committing to who at the moment? What side of the relationship is a little tentative?
Today's market, we're very much landlords not wanting to commit because obviously the rents are going up as fast as they are and they're trying to capitalize on rents. And obviously the rental index calculator is a great tool for them to keep bumping rents up. However, if you look at mature markets across the world, if anybody's signing a 5, 7, 10 year lease, there would be escalations in place anyway.
Right. So the landlords would get their bump. You mentioned there also tenants, if they're in for longer, might invest more.
Currently, if you look at the grade A office space, obviously a lot of the tenants will commit to fitting their office space out. I think if we start looking at the sort of lower segments in the market, a lot of companies who maybe are committing to a five-year tenancy contract will also look at it and go, this is an investment. We're here for the next 5 years or the next 10 years. We should be spending a lot more on our office space. And I think since COVID, people are also starting to look at what attracts talent to their offices, and obviously a better quality office will help do that.
Okay, what could it mean for commercial sales?
Commercial sales, I think, and this is a discussion we had last week, definitely the fact that people are committing to 5, 7, 10-year leases will also encourage people to look at buying properties with a yield, so a yield-based asset, or looking at buying a company or an asset that has got a blue chip tenant on it that they can then sit there with a 5, 7, 10-year lease on.
I didn't think that was the way you were going to go. You're talking there about people then buying office space as an investment because longer term tenants, better yields. I thought you were going to tell me that we would see people with this 10-year commercial license thinking, actually, I want to own my own office.
I think we've always had that. But unfortunately, there's a lot of companies that will never invest in their own real estate. They'd rather use their cash for operating expenses versus tying it up in an investment or a real estate investment. A lot of companies also look at it and think, we're not in a position to manage, run real estate. We'd rather be using that money and paid out dividends to the shareholders. We'd rather be doing something like that with our money. So you tend to find, I think, people who will benefit from this as individual landlords who look at it and think, you know what, I've got an A-grade tenant who's signed a 7-year lease. I'm going to get a good return on investment with this. There's escalations in place. There's a good break lease clause in place. And now it's going to become a good investment opportunity.
Well, every conversation I've had with people on the commercial office space front has actually been about the lack of it. The fact that people can't necessarily find the grade A stock here at the moment in the place that they want. What would longer leases mean for that?
I do think that potentially it will attract invest or developers to actually start developing some more commercial real estate. I do think if you look at the market at the moment, we're getting to that stage where the prices have increased sufficiently that it makes sense against for developers to start developing commercial. And I think with longer term leases, that will also attract more developers to build commercial real estate.
Why aren't they at the moment? Why have we got all these apartment blocks going up and not office towers?
The rates for commercial real estate were so low in 2017, 18, 19, and then obviously the pandemic hit us. Once the prices dropped even lower then, I think if you look at the build cost, the land costs, and then obviously 2 to 3 years to build, there was no return to be made. If you look at the prices today, I mean, business-based sales prices are knocking onto 2,000 dirhams a square foot. JLT is probably at 1,600 dirhams a square foot. If you look at the cost of purchasing land and then building a building, I think you're probably at 1,000 to 1,200 dirhams a square foot. So the developers are starting to see the profit, and I think you will start to see more developers going into commercial development.
Could we see a change to the way that offices are paid for, almost off-plan office sales on a 80-20, if you like?
I was lucky to be here in 2005, 6, 7 and 8, where we sold a huge amount of freehold office space. JLT, Barsha Heights, Business Bay, DIFC were the main sort of areas that we focused on it. I do know there is a developer going to be launching a freehold commercial space in Business Bay just after Eid, I believe. They're not giving us any numbers, they're not giving us any details yet, but I know it's in the making and we will have numbers probably first week or second week after Eid.
30 seconds odd with you. We're talking office space, but what about things like logistics and warehousing?
I think the logistics business in Dubai, most of the land is on leasehold. So definitely there is an interest. There always has been an interest in warehouse space in Dubai. I think Dubai is built on logistics, so there's always going to be that interest. We are not seeing the huge amount of buyers looking for industrial space. We did see that last year, the year before. I think there's not as much product in the market. I think people are also just looking to see what is actually coming available. I know there's lots of developers looking for land to develop, but not necessarily secondary market sales at the moment.
Andrew Elliott, Director of the Commercial Agency at Chesterton, speaking to us this morning about those discussions which could see the UAE getting a 10-year golden business license. What could it mean for commercial real estate? Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Brandy.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
The Five brand is a brand that needs little introduction. They made quite the debut on the hospitality scene here back in March 2017 when Five Hotels and Resorts opened the mothership up on the Palm. Since then, of course, they've been breaking records left, right and centre. In fact, last year, Five Jumeirah Village celebrated its fourth birthday and also recorded the most reviewed hotel on booking.com. So when you've got that in the family, you've got to open with a bang, and they've done exactly that within the last, well, couple of weeks. Bit of a soft opening, but going live, if you like, yesterday on Sunday, March the 31st. We are, of course, introducing the one and only Five Lux, the newest location in the Five Hotels and Resorts portfolio located in the heart of Jumeirah Beach Residence. And the man at the helm is joining us live here in studio. General Manager of Five Lux, part of the Five Hotels and Resorts, is Enrique Mandel, who joins us live this morning. Enrique, thanks so much indeed for your time.
Thank you very much, Tom, for having me this morning. Thank you.
Great to have you on board, and great to have you in as well. So let's clarify a few bits. This one has been talked about so much. There's been so much chat out there. Obviously, you couldn't avoid the building as it was going on at present. As I mentioned, prime location in the heart of JBR. But you are now officially open, is that right?
We are officially open since yesterday and fully embarking in Dubai.
And in terms of bookings, etc., people can now make bookings?
Yes, absolutely. So the booking is, our booking channels are already open since about 2 weeks. And we're really having like a huge pickup on bookings. We already, I think we opened yesterday with about a 32% occupancy. And especially from this day onwards, because yesterday with Easter Sunday, where the booking was a little bit less. But this week onwards, we see like a strong pickup. And it looks like that we should arrive to the end of the month with nearly 70% occupancy, which is fantastic for a new hotel.
That's extraordinary for a brand new hotel. I mean, I mentioned the brand there, and the brand pretty much markets itself at present. But then that comes with challenges. You have opened in one of the busiest locations in Dubai. Dubai, we know, is busy at the moment as well, with the promise to redefine beachfront living. How is Five Lux going to do that?
First of all, of course, from the location itself, it's like a stunning location directly in the beachfront. It's a very dynamic environment that we are building there. We have this unbelievable and really, I think, great F&B destinations. So we have a huge pasha pool and beach, which is really like something that we really try to define with also like with our recent acquisition that we have done in Spain. So we're going to have live entertainment, we have music there, and really, really bring the people to a luxury hotel with a great entertainment factor. So I think we are really like a great entertainment ecosystem that we have. So the F&B systems or the F&B offers that we have giving a great entertainment ecosystem.
The Five brand is synonymous with so many things. Disruptive legacy that they've had here in the region. Entertainment, hospitality, luxury lifestyle, that beautiful blend as well. As a GM of a new property, though, of the new Five Lux, what sort of culture do you look to set within the hotel? Is it going to be a party hotel? Is it going to be a luxury lifestyle hotel?
It's not going to be a party. Well, it's definitely, we are a very vibrant brand. So this is something that is in our DNA. Music is part of our DNA. Entertainment is part of our DNA. It's not a party. A party sometimes seems quite of a unorganized thing. Parties, in our case, it's a very organized environment. So we really have great F&B. We have unbelievable rooms. We have rooms that start with 65 square meters, the highest luxury approach. We go with Forbes standards. We have butler service. So we really have like the highest quality standards and a very strong entertainment factor.
So entertainment is key to the.
Entertainment is definitely key. I think this is anything that in Dubai is a very strong part now. Entertainment, the people are coming to really go because it's they like to explore something different that they don't have at home. So entertainment is a strong part that we have anywhere. It's like with our F&B concepts that we have. We have Paradiso, which is one of the best bars, or it has been consecutively for the last 3 years been voted as best bar in the world. We brought a great chef from Tickets, which is Ferran Adrian concept. So it's a tapas style. So it's a great, great F&B concept.
You mentioned the rooms there, and they are stunning. They are absolutely stunning. I mean, anyone that's seen the interior designs of this property will be in agreement with me, that's for sure. You're not just offering hotel rooms, you're also offering residences as well. Exactly. Why is that important?
Well, first of all, I think the residences give us a great possibility to have like all year round occupancy. They use all our facilities, the great services that we have. It also really feels good together, so we have this great tower, which is our residential tower, and then we have about the overall hotel. We have about 500 rooms and residences in the hotel.
Sustainability is key to the Five brand as a whole. Will that be the case of the new property as well?
100%. So sustainability is not just a word for us. It's really part of our DNA, as we said, like entertainment. Sustainability is 100%. In our everything what we approach, sustainability is the key. So we are by LEED Platinum, by this renominated company, or let's say like the highest, how do you call it? It's like LEED Platinum really gives you like the highest rating, and Five Lux is the highest five-star rated LEED Platinum hotel in the world in the moment.
Enrique, new opening. New chapter for you as well during your extraordinary career. You've been the COO of and GM for Oku Hotels, again, over in Ibiza. That's where you have been. That's where you've come from as well to be part of this. You served as the GM of the Nobu Hotel Ibiza Bay as well. Listen, you had the perfect jobs over in the perfect island as well. Why the attraction of Dubai? Why did you feel that this is the right time for you to move?
First of all, because really Five as a brand is just, as you say, like it's a brand by itself. It really defines hospitality new. It's something that's, I think nowadays, we all look as a GM, we look for great concepts. I mean, there are wonderful hotels everywhere, but I think great concept is the other thing. And Five really defines a great concept of entertainment, hotel, hospitality. And I think for me, coming from Ibiza, which is very much growing together to Dubai. So I think a lot of people that are here in the wintertime go in summer to Ibiza. It's a very entertainment lifestyle concept. And it was the perfect move. And Dubai, I think right now, is like really like the place to be. It's like the most beautiful hotels, the most wonderful concepts. And it's really like a very vibrant environment. And it's great to be here seeing the city grow and putting a hotel like us on the platform of all those beautiful hotels.
I've got about a minute left with you, but you just mentioned an interesting point there, that link between Dubai, Five and Ibiza as well. Is that one that's going to develop, do you think?
Definitely. We're trying to bring this entertainment factor. We bring this company that we bought in Ibiza, this Pasha Group. We bring it into our Five. We do it with our pool and beach. But it's still just on the beginning of the family that we grow together.
Listen, doors have been flung open. Bookings are online now as well. What's your message to people out there? Is it just to come down and try Five Lux?
No, really, stay with us. Live this ecosystem that we have built of entertainment and lodging all together. And it's really worth coming. Come to JBR. Come and visit us. We'll be there, and we're looking forward to welcoming you.
It's absolutely stunning property. And I'm not just saying that because you are sat there. I was there yesterday evening and I was absolutely blown away by it. So congratulations on the opening. Looking forward to some fun times with Five Lux and all the team down there. Enrique, thank you so much indeed for your time today.
Thank you very much, Tom, for having me.
Big thanks to Enrique Mandel for joining us live here this morning.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.